You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 22nd of April 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, once again, it's Corona. That just seems to be all that we are hearing about today. And unfortunately, the first bit of news that I've got to talk about is Donald Trump walking back on his pronouncement yesterday that he was going to stop all immigration into America, which of course is, as I say, is better late than never. But we did wonder whether he would actually be allowed to do that. And it does seem as if Jared Kushner is the fly in the ointment this time, who is complaining that he needs to still be allowing in refugees and temporary workers. Just where is he coming from on this? You've got 22 million unemployed in America. The last thing they need is competition for jobs. Every job that there is going to be needed by the American people once this lockdown is lifted. Of course, other world leaders are condemning him. The newspapers today are full of accusations of xenophobia and racism. What's racist about wanting to put your own country first and not other people's countries first? The American people are relying on Donald Trump to put them first. That's what they voted him into office for. And the fact that these other world leaders are complaining about this and criticizing him for doing that just shows that they don't represent the interests of the people that vote them in. I think the only world leader who does actually represent the people that voted him in is Viktor Orban. I saw an interview last night with a representative of Viktor Orban's government on the BBC, and Stephen Sacker, I think the name of the interviewer was, and he thinks he's a particularly hard interviewer, and he always gives an easy ride to the non-white guests that he has on there. And last night he was interviewing this representative of the Hungarian government and attacking him for Viktor Orban's emergency protocols for dealing with this virus. And one of the things that Viktor Orban has done is he's actually halved the salaries that all the politicians are going to get, all the political parties, because he knows that this is going to hit the economy. I've mentioned before about how he's said that he's going to put an extra tax on the multinational corporations and on the international banks. One of the other things he's done is taken half the salary that they would normally be taking. So, of course, this Stephen Sacker, he puts it across as, your government has taken away half the money of the opposition. Half the money of the opposition. He's used this emergency decree as an excuse to prevent the opposition from having any money. No, he's halved the money from his own party as well, for the whole of the government. I mean, this is the sort of thing that we would want to see in Britain. We would want to see the politicians saying, well, we're going to take half a salary. I mean, how does this Stephen Sacker think the people in Hungary, what the people in Hungary think of that? They think it's a wonderful thing. They think it's great that it's not just them that are having to tighten their belts, but it's the politicians as well. I mean, the double standards that the mainstream media take when they attack right-wing politicians is just incredible. I mean, hopefully hopefully we'll see Trump have a bit of backbone, and he won't back down on this. It's only a temporary measure anyway, but it's just a sensible measure. Over here in Britain, we've got people still flooding in through the airports with no checks on their temperature or anything else. We've got the people that work in the airports that are saying we really need to do something about this. We're perfectly situated to check these people as they come in, to check that they don't have the virus. And we haven't been told to do anything at all. I mean, they should really just stop everybody coming in. And it should have been done months back, but I'm not going to keep repeating myself about all the ways that this could have been avoided. Other corona news we've got some people in the right that are on the right, rather, that are pointing out that the corona death rate is 0.1%. And this has been worked out from mass testing in one of the states in America. And this isn't news to us. The fact that the corona death rate is 0.1%, that has been known since we had one of those pleasure liners, one of those pleasure cruisers that had all the old people on it, and everybody on the ship got the virus, and only 0.1% of them actually died. So we've known that it's 0.1% for quite some time. In actual fact, the UK government changed the designation of the virus from what it was to a lower designation. And of course, a lot of people were trying to say that this was a conspiracy theory, and how that could be a conspiracy theory, I don't really know. But the reason why it was downgraded is because the death rate was so low. It is extremely contagious, but the death rate is roughly the same as flu. And this is where the problem comes in. Even though it's got the same death rate as the flu, it is far more contagious than the flu. If you get the flu, you're feeling rough within 24 hours and you're not going out and you're not likely to contaminate anybody else with it. And it's very obvious that you've got the flu. If you get the coronavirus, a large portion of people don't show any symptoms at all, although they are still contagious. And the ones that do show the symptoms may not start showing the symptoms for a week. And in that time, they will still be quite lively, quite going out, seeing people. And the chances are that they are going to infect far more people than anybody with the flu is going to infect. This is why the numbers of the people that actually caught this virus were doubling every 3 days. And you don't see like those sort of numbers with people that catch the flu. So the people that are saying that coronavirus is just the same as the flu, it's only got the same death rate, they're forgetting about the contagiousness of it. And I don't see how that's really helpful to minimize the effects of this. I mean, we should be highlighting the effects of this and the failures of our government to prevent it all happening. It would have been so easy just to prevent this happening. I mean, it's just incredible that the World Health Organization were patting China on the back for isolating Wuhan, whilst at the same time telling all the other countries in the world that the best course of action was to fly people out from Wuhan into our countries. Just unbelievable. But over here in Britain, we also have something that isn't related to coronavirus. It's actually St. Stephen Lawrence Day today. And Stephen Lawrence was a young black lad that was murdered 20 years ago, something like that. And it was accused of being a racist murder. At the time, I think they had to have two or three goes at actually prosecuting the people involved. And it's a tragedy for any race, a young lad to be murdered. But they've made a huge thing about this, and they've actually made it into a special day for him. They made his mother into an honorary lord in the House of Lords, and she's got all these honorary degrees that have been given to her by universities. And they actually made today Stephen Lawrence Day. They actually gave a whole day to him. It was actually Theresa May that did this. I mean, Horace sent a message on Twitter saying, "Never forget that Theresa May, a Tory, chose to put Stephen Lawrence Day, i.e. anti-white day, the day before St. George's." And people might question, why is it anti-white to make a day in honour of this black lad that was supposedly murdered by racists? Well, because we don't have any days at all to honour all the white people that have been murdered by black racists. Just to think of a few off the top of my head, you can think of Chris Donald, the Scottish lad, horrific torture and murder by Pakistani youths, Charlene Downs, who was groomed, raped, and apparently chopped up and put into kebab meat, and the court case fell apart, even though the proof was there and that they had boasted about putting her into kebab meat. Just recently, Emily Jones, the young seven-year-old white girl that was brutally stabbed to death in front of her parents on Mother's Day, and that was all covered up in the press. We had to rely on social media reports to tell us that it was actually a Somalian that did this. So we've got no days to honour the hundreds of thousands of white people that have been murdered out of hatred for whites. Whenever you see in the mainstream media a random killing, when they say it was just at random that somebody was stabbed or murdered, that there's no motive, 9 times out of 10, what that actually means is the motive was that the guy was white. And that's why they call it a random killing, because the victim was white. And if it's the other way around, of course, they say, well, it's a racist killing. And they'll go out of their way to try and find anything they can to make out that the person that carried out the crime had some kind of animus towards foreigners. And then they can accuse it of being a racist crime. They can accuse it of being a hate crime. And the police are making a huge thing about it, being Stephen Lawrence today. They're making tweets about it. There's this one in particular that says, in 1999, the McPherson inquiry said the government should make it a priority to increase trust and confidence in policing among minority ethnic communities. We have made great strides, and it remains a priority to this day, but there is always more to do. Hashtag Stephen Lawrence Day. They always say there's always more to do. There's always further to go whenever they're talking about these issues to do with diversity. But by trying to increase trust and confidence in policing among minority ethnic communities, what they did, they ignored ethnic minority crime. A direct result of this has been up to 1 million white girls that were groomed and raped by predominantly Muslim grooming gangs, and the police were told not to investigate these crimes because it would increase community tensions. It would lose the trust and confidence of policing among the minority ethnic communities. So a direct result of this inquiry that came up with this term institutional racism to excuse the fact that blacks commit far more crimes than whites. This inquiry and the results of it is the reason why these white girls were failed in that way. And there is no institutional racism in the country. We just had Diane Abbott as the shadow Home Secretary. We've got jobs and positions at the BBC where they advertise for black and minority ethnics. We've got adverts for black and minority ethnics in particular to join the police and the fire service. White people need not apply. I mean, if there is any racism in this country, it is racism against white people. We always used to have a meritocracy here. We always used to be equal under the law. And over the last 20 years, we've stopped being equal under the law, and we have people among us who are more equal than others, people among us who get a special day because they were killed by another race. I mean, just this week, here's another news report from the Netherlands. A Sudanese asylum seeker was arrested over the weekend for murdering an 18-year-old Dutch boy with a knife in the municipality of Os in the southern Netherlands. The murder took place on Sunday morning at approximately 8 a.m. when a 25-year-old Sudanese man attacked and stabbed the victim, Rick van der Racht, with a knife while he was cycling to work, Dutch newspaper De Telegraaf reports. And of course, they will say, oh, this was just a random killing. all the killer could have known about Rick van der Racht, who was riding his bicycle to work, is that he was white. That can have been the only motive that he had. And we don't have any drives to expose the violence that's carried out by non-whites against whites, but we have a whole day devoted to talking about how mean black white people are to blacks, and how they are always suffering from this racist violence. And it's not, it's the other way around. There are far more reports of blacks killing whites than there are of whites killing blacks. And there are far more reports of blacks killing blacks, for that matter. They do have a much higher propensity for violent crime than white people do. That is just a fact that you can see from all the crime reports. But of course, this McPherson inquiry tried to say that the reason why there are so many more blacks that are in prison for crime is because of white racism. It's white racism. So the police need to the police must be racist, and the judges must be racist. And this gets followed up by David Lammy's report, which also found that there were far more young blacks in prison than but for their percentage of the population. And it's down to behavior. When we look at the fact that there are more males in prison than females, we don't say that that is because the judges and the police are anti-male and there is institutional misandry in the system. We say, well, that is because females are less likely to commit crimes. And it's the same thing with race. It's just that we've been brainwashed into thinking that we're these horrible, mean people who just pick on the blacks for no reason. And when you look at the statistics, you see that that isn't true. All you have to do is look at the violent crime rate in places like Africa, Haiti, Jamaica, countries that are black countries, have far more violent crime than we do over here. We've got another comment here from Nihilus. He says, the UK police are now just the same as the Stasi and the Cheka. Tackling crime is now secondary to enforcing the state dogma of the day. Ultra-progressive, hyper-liberal, post-democratic, neocon, communitarianism, cultural Marxism, docile consumerism, and all that it entails. And it does seem that way. They will glam it all up in terms of hate speech and incitement to racial hatred. Basically, what they mean is people criticizing the state dogma, criticizing the government's promotion of immigration, the government's promotion of diversity, and criticizing immigration. People don't actually criticize the blacks and the non-whites themselves. You can't blame them for coming over to our country when the gates are wide open. You can't blame them for coming here for a better life when they're entitled to get benefits, when they see that the laws are going to prevent the indigenous people from criticizing their behavior. You can't blame them for coming over here. The people that you blame is the government. So the excuse is used that the people that are criticizing the government, that are criticizing the results of their policies, this crazy excuse that really what we're doing is we just hate the color of people's skin and we're blaming the immigrants, which is a total lie, that gets used as an excuse to bring in these laws which clamp down on free speech. And you would think that a sensible government, a sensible police force, even if they did have laws like that, they would be put to the back of the queue, because saying things about people and hurting their feelings just doesn't compare to actual physical violence or burglaries, theft, criminal damage, actual physical damage to people and actual physical damage to property. You would think that would be more important, but it's not. You see them making these big drives, even while we've got this coronavirus problem. We've seen tweets from the police reminding people that they're still investigating all the so-called hate crimes, and anybody that hears anything online that hurts their feelings, tell the police about it. It's absolutely ridiculous. And Nihlus is quite right here that it is the same as the Stasi and the Cheka. And what they would do is, if people were criticizing communism, they would be arrested. They would have show trials. They would be accused of being mental cases for criticizing the wonderful government of the communists. And it's the same today. We're criticized. We're made out to be hateful people. We're haters. And all we really want is what is best for our people, what is best for our extended family. And we're not saying that that means you have to hate others. We're not saying that means you have to rule over others or be supremacist or anything like that. We just want somebody to represent us and speak up for us in the same way that all these blacks and minority ethnics have all these organizations and spokesmen that speak up for their communities. And as soon as we have somebody that speaks up for our community, we're accused of being racist, and we're likened to the people that killed Stephen Lawrence. And that's the point of this day, is to make the general public think that white people that speak up for other whites are just the same sort of people that killed this Stephen Lawrence. And that analogy is just a false one. To get into another subject here now, and it is one that I've actually mentioned earlier on in the week, but as I say, it's very hard to actually find variety in news stories at the moment, so you just have to bear with me. But this particular one is about these fruit picking jobs that have been going. And I talked about them a while back. I actually put an advert into the chat room because the farmers are desperate for fruit pickers, and we've got lots and lots of unemployed people who would be more than happy to work on these farms. They've been applying for these jobs. And then we hear that Romanians are being flown in to do these jobs. And apparently it's the farmers themselves that are rejecting the Brits that are applying for this. But of course, the narrative is that the British people are too lazy to want to do these jobs. They don't want to work. So foreigners have to be imported. And that's the prevailing narrative. But it's a false one. And we have to give credit to The Sun for exposing this. Brits applying for fruit picking jobs are being rejected over foreigners because they do not need to live in on-site accommodation, furious applicants claim. Farm owners are instead hiring cheaper Eastern European workers who live in fleets of mobile homes based on their land, because they can dock food and housing costs from pay. Because, of course, once these farmers have actually got a mobile home on their land, that's it, it's paid for. All they then have to do is pay the bills for the water and the electric, and they can charge these workers that are staying in these mobile homes, they can charge them rent for them. But surely they could do the same for the British. I'm sure there are lots of British people that would like to travel around Britain and stay away from home and have their rent paid while they're actually there at work. So what these farmers must be doing is actually charging over the odds for the rent of these mobile homes. And really, the government should be stepping in here and saying, look, you've got to employ the British people, because these Romanians and these foreigners that will come over and do the fruit picking, the wages that they get given, they're not going to go into the British economy, are they? They're not going to build up the British economy. They are going to be sent back home to where the exchange rate is much lower, so that they can buy more things with that money. So it's just money that's being siphoned out of our country. So it would be in the government's best interests to subsidize these farmers. Even if they were to say to these farmers, well, for each British person that you employ, we'll give you an extra £20 a week, which could then be taken off the food and the housing, so that added onto it, so that the loss in the food and the housing costs from the farmer were in some way compensated for. Brits who live locally to farms already have their own homes and will cost farmers more money to hire, it is claimed. The damning accusations come in spite of a government drive to encourage furloughed British workers to apply for some 80,000 seasonal jobs across the country in the wake of the coronavirus crisis. And I bet a lot of these people that are applying for these jobs, part of actually wanting to do it is to actually help the country through this crisis, to actually feel like they are doing something to help out. I mean, this is the general vibe that you pick up from white people. If you look around at Captain Tom, who did his walk, sponsored walk for the NHS, there's all sorts of things like that going on. People are making up masks for free. They're doing everything that they can to help the NHS. Everybody's trying to pull together in this. And I dare say that part of the inspiration from these furloughed British workers is just so that they can feel like they are doing something to help. And the farmers are just not letting them. The farming industry has warned that thousands of tons of fruit and vegetables will rot in fields if the vacancies aren't filled. So the government needs to say to them, well, they're not going to rot in the fields if you employ the British, are they? And this is why Donald Trump is saying we can't have immigration into America, because they need the Americans to be doing these jobs and we need the British to be doing these jobs. Some 35,000 Britons are said to have applied for seasonal workers' vacancies so far. Yet despite the patriotic call to arms, some 150 critically important Romanian fruit and vegetable pickers landed at Stansted Airport on Wednesday before being transported by buses to a 7,000-hectare super farm in East Anglia. I mean, how much did that cost? How much did that cost to charter a specific flight to fly over these 150 fruit pickers? I mean, it's quite easy to teach people how to pick fruit and vegetables. It wasn't critically important that they actually had these Romanians to do it. I mean, these adverts for working on these farms have actually been saying that people will receive training. The Romanians will live in a fleet of existing accommodation on farmers' land, where they are usually charged around £70 a week for the privilege, which is docked directly from their pay. So, as I say, really what the government needs to do is give some kind of a subsidy to the farmers to make up partially for that £70 a week that they're going to lose, and tell them that they have to employ Brits to do this job. And the other thing they could do is sell it to the general public in a different way. Say to them, well, how would you like to travel around Britain for the summer? Have a look around our beautiful country, the beautiful countryside. You can tour around for 3 months working on different farms and staying in a different caravan on a different farm every month or every couple of weeks. I mean, it sounds like a lovely lifestyle, doesn't it? People like to do that in tents. They like to do that in caravans when they're retired. They like to travel around Britain. And here you are, you could do this and you could be paid for it. And if you're guaranteed to have 3 months of it, then you could put your stuff in storage. I mean, this would be great for somebody that was still living at home with their parents. They could, so that they didn't have to pay rent while they were gone. They could go and live on these farms and see a bit of Britain and enjoy it. But instead, they're trying to get the foreigners to come here and do this. It's all the way that you look at this, I guess. And part of it also is the problems with the benefits, because people might say, well, I need to get my benefits. I need this amount every week. And if I take up this job, then I will lose my benefits. And at the end of it, when the job finishes, at the end of the summer, it's going to take 2 months or whatever it is to get back onto the benefits scheme again. So again, the government need to make provisions for that. They need to say something like, well, you can go and have this job, and at the end of 3 months, you'll be guaranteed that you'll be able to go straight back onto your benefits without having to wait a month or whatever in order to get the money through. I'm sure they could do this, but of course we've got so many problems with so many people involved in this, with these committees that do all of this. I'm sure they would mess it up. You know, our administration is just so incompetent at the moment. They probably wouldn't actually get all this sorted out until next spring, by which time it would be 6 months too late. And this is why it is so much better when you have just one person that is in charge, an authoritarian state that can just get things done straight away, instead of having all these different quangos and think tanks and all these different committees that are doing everything, like all these different departments. I mean, you should just have the government saying, right, make sure that their benefits will continue and they'll be able to put a claim in straight away and they'll get the money straight away. Why can't they just do that? Why do they have to faff around and mess around and be incapable of actually getting anything done? I mean, this is one of the problems with our democracy. Brits who have applied for jobs say they have been rejected for lacking experience, despite adverts insisting that full training will be provided. And unless you're actually operating machinery, it really doesn't require that much training to learn how to pick fruit and veg. Others who come from agricultural and farming backgrounds have simply been ignored. I mean, that's incredible. People that know what they're doing are being ignored. Landscape gardener Anthony Hicks, 37, from Chessington, Surrey, applied for numerous fruit picking roles, but only heard back from one. He said they said I'd not been accepted. No reason given. I have worked in vineyards, picked grapes, done landscape gardening for a decade. I'm willing to work and get off my backside, and I don't understand why I'm not suitable. It's very demoralising to hear they need an army of people when it appears no one can get a sniff. Of course, if we had a nationalist-minded government, a nationalist-minded state, these farmers would instinctively feel loyalty to these white British and prefer to give them a job anyway, even if it was going to cost them that little bit more. One 52-year-old woman who has a career in fruit and vegetable sales responded to a vacancy near London, but was then emailed by an East European recruiter to say there were no vacancies. Well, we know that there are vacancies. There are 80,000 vacancies, we're being told. I think what the farmers are doing here is just refusing to employ the Brits in the hope that the British government will allow them to get these cheaper foreigners. I mean, this is the issue. This is why immigration is such a problem for the native workers, because the people that are employing can always get people in from abroad that are going to do the job, that are going to do the work for less money. This is why you need a nationalist-minded state that will put a stop to that and ensure that people are paid enough, and then we'll be self-sufficient. We need to be self-sufficient. We can't just rely on these other countries all the time, whether it's for goods or whether it's for people. She told The Sun, I believe the real issue is that farmers want staff they can put in their own accommodation on site, which of course they get charged for, therefore making the labour rate cheaper. Kelvin Williams, an equine dentist, and his wife both applied for jobs at a farm in Kent, but they were rejected without reason. I mean, you've got people here that have got really good qualifications, and I'm sure they would be excellent help on a farm, and they're just being turned away. He said, I know loads of other people who have also applied for these jobs locally and been rejected. They want people from abroad so they can fill up their accommodation, caravans and so on, which they can then charge for and knock down the pay. English people don't need accommodation. They can put all the foreigners in the caravans, which they already own, and save a lot of money. I mean, this is an absolute scandal that this is going on, and I am very loyal to farmers, but they should really have some loyalty to the British people. Ruth Wallerton, 57, a horse groom from Oxford, said her son applied for a fruit-picking job on a farm but also heard radio silence. She said, we're hearing it over and over again that hundreds of people we know are applying for these jobs, but it's clear the farms simply do not want British workers. And we are still reading in places like The Guardian and the Independent that all these jobs are still there because the British people don't want to do the work. And that is just not true. The Sun contacted half a dozen firms advertising for seasonal workers yesterday to ask how many Brits they had hired. None responded. A government spokesman said last night, while demand is currently being met, the farming industry will need more workers for the peak harvest months from late May. That will continue to be provided through existing seasonal work schemes, but the government is also working with industry to help them manage and train new and inexperienced workers onto farms as they help with this effort. Well, how about the government tells these farmers that they have to employ the British people and that the government will help them out with that? And if they need a little bit of a subsidy to cover the fact that they're not making the money from renting out their caravans, then so be it. I mean, one of the things they could do is just allow the farmers to rent out the caravans to people that need somewhere to live. And they don't have to rent these caravans out to specifically to the people that are working on the farms. They could have a long let rather than a short let, and they could allow people that are unable to get council houses to move into these caravans. People that are living in caravans stand a much better chance of actually being given a council house, because they then get given points because they're not living in bricks and mortar. They go up the council housing list and they stand a much better chance of getting proper accommodation. There are reasons why people would want to be living in these caravans. There are ways around this, but we need the government to get behind the British people and step in here, because this is not on. We have all these unemployed Indigenous people who all want to help, and between the farmers and the government, they're not being able to. And again, it just shows that the loyalty of the government is not to the Indigenous people. It's firstly to the economy, and secondly, it's to diversity and these other peoples. That's the way that it seems to me. It's misplaced charity that is directed outwards instead of inwards. Charity begins at home. We should never forget that. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.